I do it over specific things.
I
Depending on where you go, but they are. So it looks like everyone has got to work or something, I don't know, on a Monday morning. I was sitting in the traffic for 45 minutes. It was crazy. Thanks for sticking around, and sorry. Hopefully, we'll try and at least have some material to discuss.
Christian. He is of no use to you.
Okay, folks, settle down. So last time I got started talking about the link layer and what the general functions of a link layer are. So what we're going to do today is start by looking at how a link layer on a host is implemented, and then look at error detection and correction. Okay. So we've done a bit of that, but I think, you know, let's revisit that and probably complete that discussion. And if we have time, then we can get started on the multiple access protocols. Okay. So the first question is, where is the link layer implemented? Sort of throughout the course so far, I've been referring to the network interface card or the Wi-Fi card or Ethernet card and things like that. So these obviously refer to some piece of hardware that you put it in your end user device, be it a laptop or a PC or your phones. Okay, sometimes, you know, they already come with it by default. So there is this hardware element for sure, but there is also a software element that's part of the host operating system that implements part of the link layer. So if you look at this picture, so this dotted area is basically the hardware part of it that you plug in into your system. And it connects to the system bus, and there is a bit of that, like I was saying, that uses the host resources, and it's implemented within the host. Typically, it's part of the device driver. Okay, so you have the device driver on the host interacting with the hardware that you where most of the functionality is implemented. So the core of the functionality of the link layer is implemented as part of the controller. So these functions, just to recap, are framing. You create a frame out of a datagram, and you worry about reliable data transfer, flow control, error detection, error correction, multiple access. So various things that link layer does, they are part of this controller mostly. But the interface is done via the device driver. So basically, that's how things are implemented in the host. What the way a line card is implemented within a router, we have seen as part of the network layer. So we've seen that when a packet comes in, it sort of goes to an input port of a switch and then is sent or forwarded via an output port, and the various issues involved in terms of input queuing, input port queuing, and output port queuing. So those things are relevant in a router context, but for an end user device or a host, so this is how things are implemented. Okay. So pretty much the same thing. The controller is the key here. So error detection and correction. So the need for error detection or correction arises because oftentimes in practice we have to face links which can flip bits and corrupt packets. Now, a way of recovering from that, we've already seen that. Assume that there is some error detection capability at the receiver and use that to feed back to the sender to resend, and that's how you can recover. Okay. But how you do error detection plays a big part in terms of what the actual receiver receives. Now, you could do very simple error detection. Some of these schemes we're going to look at in a moment. You could do a very simple error detection mechanism that is not foolproof, in the sense that even though there may be errors in the packets, they may go undetected. Because of the simplicity of the error detection mechanism. In that case, the link layer would pass corrupt packets up to the higher layers. Okay, so that is a problem, especially for link layers which are not very reliable. Basically, wireless links, satellite links, anything wireless requires more robust error detection. Now, by the same token, if a particular link is highly error-prone, then we have to question the paradigm of trying to do this error detection, feedback, and retransmission, because that is going to be very expensive, time-consuming process, because errors happen pretty much for every frame, or you know, frequently. Then you have to incur this overhead of having to feed back and also retransmit. So you're just making things worse by trying to recover from errors in that sort of a scenario. Okay. Now, an alternative way of doing this is basically try and be proactive, where you could try and introduce some redundancy in the packets, not just for helping the receiver detect errors, but to help the receiver correct any errors that might occur in the packet. Okay. Now, in order to correct a large amount of errors that might occur in the packet, you need to have large amount of redundancy. So it is not free of cost, but there is a trade-off. Depending on what your error rate is in terms of the channel, you have to either use error detection plus retransmission or error correction. And in some cases where time is a big issue, for instance, if you're dealing with an application which is very sensitive to delay, like a real-time interactive multimedia type of an application, internet telephony, for example, in those kind of scenarios, time is important. So if you take longer to recover from an error, it is not going to help the application in any way. So even in those scenarios, it helps for you to incur this additional overhead up front, whether or not there is going to be an error, and proactively help the receiver to recover from errors. Okay. So that's sort of where these error detection and correction come in the first place. Now, if you look at the concept in action, you have the datagram from a link layer perspective. It gets sent to the link layer. Link layer adds a header and encapsulates the datagram in a frame. So this is the frame part of it. So we're just trying to, in a real implementation, even this additional things that we throw in for error detection are also part of the frame. But for now, assume that everything else is the frame, and we are just worrying about error detection and correction addition separately. Okay, so this is the additional thing that we are adding, and we send it over a channel. You get something different because the channel can change what you send, and so basically you would want your D prime to be equal to D. If that is the case, then you pass it to the higher layer, otherwise you throw it. Okay, you say you detected an error, and then you feed back depending on the protocol that you're using. Now, in this case, whether you conclude that D prime equals D depends on your error detection mechanism, obviously. Okay, and whether you're able to recover from errors without having to go back to the sender, all again depends on your error detection and correction mechanism. So let's start by looking at something very trivial in terms of error detection. Okay, you may have seen this already in some other context, I'm not sure, but you know, this is probably the simplest form of error detection you could ever have. It's called a single parity mechanism. So you could have an even parity or an odd parity option here. So essentially the idea is if you, for instance, use odd parity, what that means is you're looking for a total of odd number of ones in the whole packet, including the parity bit. So you add a bit, and then the number of ones in this should be equal to one. Let's count to make sure whether I'm referring to odd or even here. So you have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So basically, we are using an odd parity scheme here. So therefore, we put in a 0 here to just make it odd parity. Now, at the receiver, you again check the parity. And if you find that this has even parity, if it has even number of bits, then you conclude that there is an error. Okay. Now, it could be that there could be multiple of these that have happened, and as a result, the parity failed. There is no way of telling what exactly happened. It may not be because of just one bit error. It could be because of a number of bit errors. And it is also possible that you may have parity being successful at the receiver, but there may be errors in the packet. That's very, very easy to construct. If I just flip two bits, then parity will be fine. Okay, so you'll have 7 ones or 11 ones. It is still an odd parity, but I would accept it as a correct packet. Okay, so even though this is simple, obviously it is not foolproof. Now let's look at something slightly more complicated, which allows you to not only detect single bit errors, but also allows you to correct single bit errors. Okay, so far with the single bit parity mechanism, you could detect only single bit errors. Okay, if you have more than one bit errors, then pretty much you can't even detect that. So here, for single bit errors, you're not only able to detect with a 2D parity scheme, but also you're able to correct, but you can detect two bit errors as well. So there are two things that this 2D parity scheme does. So the way we do this is essentially we have a row parity and a column parity. So we just take the data bits and then organize them in a matrix. And then we have these additional parity bits based on odd or even, whichever we can choose, and then consistently use that both at the sender and the receiver side. So basically, if we have, let's say you have I rows and J columns, then you have I plus J plus 1 parity bits that get added. Okay, so depending on the size of the matrix, essentially. Now, clearly you can see that to get this single bit correction or to get two bit error detection, you have to incur a lot of overhead. Here you just had one bit additional overhead. Now you have an additional I plus J overhead. Okay, so basically, that sort of becomes a recurring theme here, that as you want more protection, you have to throw in more overhead. Okay, in terms of how this scheme works, so you essentially, if you realize that you know there is a parity on a row and a column, then that suggests that you know there is an error in a particular element in the matrix. And that element, if you were to flip it, then pretty much you are able to correct that single bit error. But if you have two errors, you cannot correct it, but you can detect it with this scheme. Now, these are, in a way, basic types of error detection mechanisms. We have seen one slightly sophisticated, but still not foolproof mechanism that's used in the internet protocol stack, especially the network layer and the transport layer. This is the checksum algorithm. Now, this is often implemented in software because you know TCP/IP protocol stack sits as a part of your operating system. So it needs to be fast, okay? And it needs to be efficient in terms of the number of bits that you can add to a packet. So given these constraints, it is necessarily simplistic, okay? Now, the simplicity comes with a cost where, you know, sometimes, you know, there may be an error in the packet that goes undetected as a part of, because of this mechanism. But the mechanism as such is slightly different in terms of the paradigm compared to the parity-based mechanism. So here the idea is you take your message and break them down into different words of a certain size, 16 bits to be specific in the internet checksum algorithm, and then you take all these words and then sum them up using this ones complement sum notation, and basically use that as your checksum. Okay, so at the receiver, if including the checksum, your whole packet sums up to all ones, then you conclude that there is no error in the packet. If you see any zeros when you sum all of, sum everything up, then there is a problem. Okay, so that's how the checksum algorithm works. We've discussed this when we were looking at the transport layer. Here is just there to just complete the picture. Now let's go to something which is actually more robust and something which is used at the link layer typically. Okay, so this comes from a completely different paradigm from the earlier two mechanisms. So it's not a parity-based scheme or it's not a checksum-based mechanism. So it is based on something called polynomial codes. So essentially the view that you have to take when you're looking at CRC is you look at your bit string, like for instance the D bits that you want to send, as a polynomial. Look at it as a polynomial. Okay. Whenever you have a 1 at some place in that string, then that means that the coefficient for that term is 1. Otherwise, the coefficient is 0. Okay. Just to sort of give an example, let's see. If we have, let's say, a 4-bit data string that we are looking at, then suppose that, you know, I have a bit string called 0101, okay? Now, in a polynomial notation, it corresponds to x to the power of x squared plus 1, okay? So that's what it corresponds to in a polynomial notation because, you know, for the least significant bit, I have 1. So the coefficient for x to the power of 0 is 1. And the coefficient for x to the power of 1 is 0. So basically, I don't have that term. And coefficient for x to the power of 2 is 1. So 0, 1, 0, 1 correspond to x to the power of 2 plus 1. Okay. So that's how you look at your bit strings. Okay. Now, the idea here is essentially you have a polynomial which is called a generator that is known both to the sender and the receiver. Okay, so this is something like a common knowledge on both sides. That is of size r plus 1, meaning it has r plus 1 bits if you look at it as a polynomial, where you're looking at coefficients, okay? Now, the idea is, the goal is that your error detection part of it, the stuff that you're going to add in terms of the EDC bits, have to be such that the data plus the error detection together divides the generator polynomial perfectly. So basically, the generator polynomial is perfectly divisible by this combination. So you have the data bits, which you can look at it as a polynomial, and you have some bits that you throw in here, which are the error detection bits. These together should divide the generator polynomial perfectly. Okay, so that's the goal. So if that doesn't happen at the receiver side, so at the sender side you will make sure that and accordingly fill this part, but at the receiver side if that doesn't happen, then you conclude that there is a problem. Okay, So that's how the mechanism works. Now let's try and translate that into what you might, how you might want to represent this, this in terms of the whole message. Here you have the D bits. If you left shift them by R bits, then pretty much you create space for new bits to be added. And those new bits are referred to as the by capital R. Okay, that's of size R. Now, this size R is not an accidental thing. You have the R plus 1 bit generator polynomial. I think it's probably mentioned here, R plus 1 bit pattern. Now, when you divide your data by this generated polynomial, you would end up with a remainder of R bits. Okay, so let's see why, how this process works a bit more to appreciate what's happening. So, like I said, you know, you want your whole message that you are sending, including the error detection bits, to be perfectly divisible by the generated polynomial. Now, what you could do is, you, if you XOR on both sides with this R, then pretty much the left side, the XOR will disappear because, you know, that R part of it, when you have XOR of two identical things, it becomes zero. Okay? So if you have 111 and 111, if you XOR them, then you get 000. Okay? So that, if you were to do that, so basically this left-hand side becomes just your data, left shifted by R bits, and the right becomes this one. Now, this is equivalent to what you have here. So basically, if you were to divide your data with this particular generated polynomial, you would end up with the remainder of R. Okay? Now, that is what is shown here for an example. So let's consider that you have your data string, which is shown here. It's left shifted, and you have three zeros that are thrown in. And this is your generative polynomial. So this, in a polynomial form, it corresponds to x to the power of 3 plus 1. Okay. So previously, I gave an example of 0, 1, 0, 1. Here, we have slightly different polynomial. So if you were to divide this, so it is... the process seems similar to what we would do when we were when we divide integers, but here the slight difference is that when you have to subtract, you just do an XOR. Okay, so this is in modulo 2 arithmetic. So you sort of do an XOR. For instance, at this step, you have 1 and 1 becomes 0, 1, 0 becomes 1. And then you bring in one from the rest of the divisor, and then essentially, so this cannot divide this one. So basically, you put in a zero and then bring in one more in terms of. So basically, you do the same XOR here. 1 0 becomes 1, 0 0 becomes 0, 1 0 becomes 1. And here, you bring in one more from here. Basically, that becomes 1010. Then it can divide 1001. That's the generated polynomial. And so you repeat the process of XOR and trying to divide this polynomial with your with this particular string, which is a left-shifted form of your data. Okay. So ultimately, you end up with some remainder. In this case, it happens to be 011, but it will be different depending on your data string and your polynomial. Okay. So what you do is you take this and then XOR it with your string. Okay. Then that becomes the string that you want to send across. Okay. Now, if you can work this out on your own, if any of these bits get flipped, so basically I take the 011 and then replace them here, replace these three zeros with that, And if suppose any of those bits are flipped, you will end up getting a remainder on the receiver side if you follow the same operation. So the same operation is you take 10110, that is the data part, 011, and any of those bits flip at your will, and then try to divide it by 1001. You would end up with a non-zero remainder. Okay. If you use exactly what is sent, then you get a zero remainder. So this is worth checking for yourself, and that is the key to how the CRC mechanism works. Now, CRC mechanism, here what we have seen is using a very small generative polynomial that is for illustration purposes. But in practice, for instance, in the Ethernet case and in the Wi-Fi case, we use polynomials of length 32. Okay, so the much larger polynomials. So, and accordingly, the number of bits you need in terms of error detection also increase correspondingly, because you know you have R plus 1 bit polynomial and an R bit remainder. So that will be what you have as the CRC field in your frame header. So as we when we see Ethernet, you can observe that you know there is a CRC field as part of the frame header. Okay, so this is common, and it is powerful in the sense that it is not just able to detect single errors, but a burst of errors of length R. Okay, so if you have a series of bits in your message that get corrupted, up to length R, which is the length of the